Hello, everybody. Welcome to this live stream. And this is my first time doing this, so we're just sorting out some technical things. And also on Instagram, I want to say come to YouTube because there you can see me properly, but we have an Instagram set up here as well. So excited to see you all. We're going to talk today. So who is this for today? Because we're going to talk about how to tap into our own power to contribute more to global peace. Just a small thing, right? Just a little thing that may have been on your feeds in the past days, weeks, months, and actually years, right? It's not like this just all came out of nowhere. So, yes. So who is this for? Who is this live for? This is for anybody who is concerned about the state of the world, anybody who wants our systems to change, but maybe doesn't know exactly how and where to start, ex especially what to do as just one individual. If that's not a concern of you, or if you're happy with the way things are, maybe this life is not for you, or this recording, right? Whenever you're going to see this. Hey, everybody on Instagram, you can also join me on YouTube at Cup of Empathy. You might be able to see me better. Hey, Vasant. So yeah, I'm excited to talk about that. I actually originally scheduled this as a celebration of my 100th YouTube video. But then after a couple of days, I was like, okay, I still want to celebrate that. I'm super grateful for anybody who was here, maybe from the very first video. Let me know if that's you. Actually, that would be so exciting. But then I thought I want to pick a theme for today, especially since what everything that happened in the past week. So that's why I picked this theme. So let me see. So I haven't figured out how to see comments on my YouTube thing. Wait, let me see. Okay, well, I'm just hoping it's working, and maybe I'll just see comments on Instagram. So if you want to say anything, if you have any questions, just let me know at any point. And we can interact a little bit that way. So I want to make one note before we start. I've heard, especially if you are into NVC, if you're maybe an NVC trainer or an NVC student, I've heard some NVC people, students say that as an NVC trainer, you have to be neutral. You can't be political. And I don't agree with that. First of all, I think it's very tricky to say what is even political. I mean, if I share publicly that I'm queer, some people find that a political statement, right? Whereas for other people, for me personally, that is an observation, a neutral observation, if you will. So it's almost a philosophical question, what is political and what is not? And oftentimes when we label something in this context as political, what we're trying to say is that it shouldn't be talked about. So it's just a way to silence people, I find. Secondly, from an NVC perspective, we could say, well, aren't we teaching empathy for everybody, right? We're teaching that both sides need to be heard. So as an NVC trainer or as an NVC enthusiast, we shouldn't pick sides. Right, we shouldn't pick sides. So I want to say that yes, when we do the four steps of NVC, our intention is to connect with all parties involved. And that means that we are going to look for the beauty behind what they're doing or saying. And next to that, Marshall Rosenberg also, hey everyone, introduced the concept of protective use of force. And protective use of force means that if I, for example, if I have a child and they're ripping up a book of mine, they're about to rip it up, right? And I want to protect my book, I'm no longer in my intention to connect, right? The four steps are intended to connect. I'm no longer in that intention. I'm now in the intention to protect. I want to protect my book. And then maybe afterwards, I can still connect. I can still have a dialogue. And protective use of force, just to remind you, for those maybe who for who it's a long time ago, or if you've never heard about it before, is a use of force without the intention to punish, right? This is not about punishing people. This is about protecting. And protective use of force can be physical, right? I can physically stop someone when they're attacking me. This is not my moment to go in empathy, in empathic listening. But it can be verbal as well. And so my opinion is that what's going on right now in the US, in many other areas that I'm not going to say out loud because I don't know how the algorithm would be censoring. How do you say that? Yeah, trying to censor this stuff. But I think you know which areas I'm talking about. Yeah, I think it's time to say, hey, we need to protect, right? It has been time for that for quite a while now. And I think it's time to mobilize in a way. And when I say mobilize, maybe there's all sorts of associations that we all have to take to the streets. And that's not at all what I mean. What I mean is that I want to support people to connect to their inner power and find our own talents and our own ways to contribute so that we don't say in 10 years, wow, I made a mistake, right? I'm on the wrong side of history now. I mean, that's not the main goal, right? Not to be on the wrong side of history, but this is what can happen when we are frozen with fear or completely overwhelmed, right? One of the things that is a tactic of more authoritarian regimes is that they're overwhelming people with all sorts of things happening, drama, 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 and our feeds, the media, everything is super overwhelming, and it makes us incredibly overwhelmed and tired, and we might just give up, right? So this session is not about giving you a lot more information or input. It's really about slowing down. Yeah, so I actually want to slow down for a moment. I see someone asking, can justice be a need? Yes, I think so. So in MVC, we say that needs are abstract and I say common. I try to avoid the word universal because it's a bit heavy. But when we move to more abstract and common terms, those are needs, right? And I think I would say most people have a need for justice. There is a commonality there and it's abstract. Right? Sometimes we might have a very specific idea about what is justice, and that would be a strategy. Then we're no longer in the abstract area. But if, as long as the term justice is completely abstract, then yeah, I would say that's a need. Yeah, thank you for that question. So I mentioned slowing down. Hey, everybody who just joined, I'm also on YouTube. That might be easier to see me, but otherwise, you're just going to see me from the side. So slowing down, why is that so important? Because it might sound a bit like I don't know, boring or too simple. But like I said, I think there is the way our whole society is set up with working full time. Most people work more than they want. And most people have more unpaid labor than they want. I think, let me know if you agree with that, if that's the case for you, I mean. And to have the time to process what is going on around us on a global scale, when we're actually trying to survive just in our own little family, in our own little bubble, which is also part of our system, right? We are set up with this new Western society, right? Set up in nuclear families. So we have usually two people max to take care of a bunch of kids, which, you know, I think ideally you'd have like four grown-ups per one kid or something like that, some sort of ratio. Let me know if you think of another type of ratio that would be ideal for that. And it's not just about that. It's also about how do we take care of senior citizens, right? So it's all very fragmented. And this sense of isolation, I think, is really, it's literally hurting our hearts, I think, on a level that we might not constantly be aware of, because again, we're in survival. So to get out of survival, I think one of the most powerful medicines is slowing down, is rest. That's why, I don't know exactly who, but some people say like rest is the most like rebellious act that we can have. Thank you so much, Laura. Yeah. So what do you think about that? What I said so far, curious to hear. How does it sound to you, the slowing down? And so when I talk about power, it's a bit tricky because in English, I think power as a system of domination is the same word, it's power, as inner power. I would just say we put the term inner before it. In my language, in Dutch, we have actually a completely different word for the term inner power and the term power as in overpowering. And Marsha Rosenberg also tried to split the two up by saying there's such a thing as power over and power with, right? But somehow I find that more difficult to use. But yeah, it's about inner power and comparing that to having power over. Andrea is saying, I agree, rest is the best. And C is saying, lovely, rest as a rebellion. Yes. Yes. Okay. So, Yeah, so those two concepts of power. I'm curious to ask you, because this is going to be a bit more of an exploration than I haven't prepared slides. Like normally, I don't know if you've been in my webinars, but I prepare slides, I prepare a lot of text. I literally just wrote like five little points this time. So it's going to be a bit different. It's going to be more of an exchange and actually an opportunity for you to slow down, because I think slowing down is much easier done together in a group than on our own. On our own, we might grab our phone. You know, it's hard to do that. It's a muscle we need to practice, and it's easier to do that together. So I want to ask you about power and your jackals about power, right? Your judgments, your associations. So I want to ask you to just close your eyes for a moment and then just finish this sentence. Power is, and then just see how your brain finishes it. Or maybe it's just a physical reaction you get to the word power. I'm curious to hear a couple of reactions. I don't know if I can, yeah. I can see reactions on Instagram as well, I think. And if you, Laura is saying upmanship, power over. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so one that I really had was something like power corrupts people. Like when we have power, we become amoral or unethical, like power hungry, you know, like power is an addiction. It cannot be enjoyed in a way that is, I don't know, responsible or has positive effects. And I think it makes sense because the way we get to know power, it's already, most people grow up with parents who overpower them, right? It might sound like very heavy, but it's like the way, you know, our parents tell us when to get up, when to go to bed, what to eat, what school to go to sometimes even what to study, right? And they might do that literally, or they might in a subtle way influence us or manipulate us to do that. And that is a form of power over, right? Which is why MVC is so amazing for parenting as well, because we then operate with power with. And I think it's very helpful to explore this, our relationship to power, because if our thought is that power corrupts, or power means, oh yeah, I see someone else saying power corrupts. Laura is saying upmanship, power over. Yes, I see some positive associations, freedom to do what I want. Okay. Andrea, surrender, which requires a lack of fear. Can you say more about that? That's interesting. So there are some positive associations as well. Right now, I was more looking for our jackals, our negative jackals about it. So, any other thoughts about any other jackals about power? Maybe on Instagram. I think. Okay, there's no other jackals right now. That's okay. So I would say that tapping into our inner power is an essential part of daring to go against what society tells us. So that's one piece, right? But when we talk about contributing to global situations, there can be all sorts of jackals as well about how that's difficult. And so I want to give you a minute to just think for yourself, what are reasons? Maybe you are doing already a lot of things. So just if you are not doing as much as you'd like, or nothing at all, and you would like to do something, for those people, I want to ask to just write down what are thoughts that are blocking you. And I'll mention a couple in a bit as well that could be blocking you, but just maybe first, just want to give you a minute to just think for yourself what could be blocking you. What are thoughts about why you can't do that? Why it's not useful? Whatever it might be, right? And if you already have an idea, just throw it in the comments. Seeing the protective use of force is often felt as an attack. Do you have an example of that? So is there anybody who would like to contribute more than they're doing right now? Can you let me know? Fear of being shunned or looked down on. Yes, I can imagine that's one that, thank you for sharing that one. Yeah, I can imagine that's one that more people might be able to relate to. Yeah, this is such a human wish to be part of the tribe, right? Part of the tribe, really. It can trigger like such a fear response, like even a fear of death, right? Because that's what it meant when we were, cavemen, let's say, or even when we were growing up, we needed to belong in our family. Otherwise, we didn't have anybody to take care of us. So yeah, that can be a very big one. Ah, Laura. Okay, so the question is, what beliefs do you have that stop you from contributing to global peace? So I was asking, who would like to contribute more than they're doing right now? Let me see if there's any comments here. Hey, Martina. So I recommend to join on YouTube because then I can see your comments more easily, but I will check here every now and then, just so you know. Okay, so let me share a couple of one thing that can help you contemplate about this is to complete the phrase, I am powerless because dot, dot, dot. I'm powerless when it comes to global peace because dot, dot, dot. And you can also fill in any situation you do really care about is really bothering you, but you don't know you're blocked to do something. I'm powerless in this particular situation because, and then see what your mind comes up with. We already heard one, which is the fear of being shunned. So I also wrote down the fear of being judged, ridiculed, punished by your boss, colleagues, partner, family, right? When I, 2 years ago, I think it's almost 2 years ago, that stuff in Palestine started to get real bad. I mean, it was already going on for decades, right? But, and I kind of spontaneously published something on my Instagram, and I instantly lost a friend. That really scared me. And I think it took me a while to again publish about it. So yeah, that's a human fear, right? Ilya, I'm stopped by fear because I live in an authoritarian country. Even simple actions like teaching, including MVC, I do very carefully. Yes, yes. So here we're talking more about beliefs than your current factual situation, although they can, like, they are connected, right? Laura, I am powerless when I'm so activated with anger, injustice, frustration, that I'm not being heard, seen, or understood. Yeah, that's interesting. Does that happen in a specific situation with certain people? I'm going to come back to that, Laura. That's interesting. Another one can be, I'm too small. I don't understand what's happening. I might not fully know all the facts and all the complexities of the situation. I have too little followers online. I'm not important, right? I group those all together because they're all a bit around this theme of I'm too small. I'm too small for this. And it can be interesting to think also when you have whatever belief you have, in this situation when it comes to standing up for what you believe in, when it comes to standing up for justice, oftentimes they're quite similar to our self beliefs, how to say that, are the beliefs about ourselves in general, right? Some core beliefs that we might have about ourselves or about life. Like, for example, for me, I think for a long time, and it might still be like a weak spot, I thought I'm too small. I'm small. I'm weak. That's what I thought, which might, you know, have to do with all sorts of things in childhood. When actually, I mean, for all of us, the reality of childhood is that we were small, right? It was just factually everything was bigger and more powerful than we were for a long time, at least the first like 6-7 years, which is when we built all of our beliefs about ourselves. So those first 7 years, they really shape us. And we might not realize that we're still operating in those beliefs. So maybe just want to take a couple seconds to let that sink in. Andrea is saying, when I helped migrants, I had to accept surrender to rejection of my community and friends. Wow. That is painful, right? I imagine. Yeah, and it can be really heartbreaking when we have so much heart for something, for a cause, right? For a certain group of people or groups of people. And our own people, the people that we have such trust in and actually want support from to be able to show up in a larger way, right, for more people. Yeah, that can really bring up a lot of, I imagine, like disappointment and maybe bitterness even. Yeah. And I do believe that sometimes we go through a certain growth in shaping what we believe in and standing up for that. And then certain people fall away and then other people will come. And yeah, it's both there, right? The grief needs to be given attention. And then there can be slowly, maybe some hope again for something new. But yeah, let me know how that lands, Andrea. Yes, but my belief was strong and it helped. Yes, I can really imagine when it's really something you believe in, that gives a certain energy. And this is something I wanted to say, and I can maybe say that now about anger, because Marshall Rosenberg says that anger means that a very important core need of us is not getting met. And I agree with that. And I like that definition because it helps us see anger in a more positive light. Like, oh, it's actually something that is a big indicator. But I think anger is more than that. I think it's when you just focus on that, it reduces anger to a symptom, right? It's a symptom of something and we just have to find the cause. And that's it. Then the function of anger is complete. I believe that anger can also be bringing energy. It can bring a lot of energy to actually put into something. And if we don't do that, it can also be that the anger gets stored and doesn't get used the way that it wants to be used. So especially when it comes to injustice, right? So that's also why I think it's important to look at where we're blocked to act so that we can use the anger. And I think when anger gets used, we can also let joy in and it can all coexist. And so it also doesn't have to become so heavy. So we can keep it up longer, let's say. Ilya is saying, it seems that the world is not in such demand for something that will help negotiate, and there are too many people who will be against it. Okay, so the thought is something like it's futile, right? It's what I want to do. There might be not enough people interested. There's too many people against it, so it might not be effective. Is that what you mean? I like that you're saying that, because that can be one of the blocks as well, right? I'm alone in this. Actually, I wrote this down as I'm alone in this. Which is also interesting to reflect on, whether that is one of our core thoughts about life, right? I'm alone in life. And I think especially when it comes to social justice, the effectiveness isn't in the number of people. So there is some reality there, I think. And when we believe that we're alone in it, that's also, that can block us, and that can actually block us from connecting with other people, right? Yeah, so we had gathered a couple so far. So we're powerless. We think we're powerless, right? These are all the stories. I'm powerless because I'm too small. I don't understand what's happening. I might be judged, ridiculed, punished. I'm alone in this. Are there any other? I have one or two more others, I think, but I'm curious also what you might come up with. Thoughts, look for people to be thoughts. Think with the heart can make you jump out for joy. Okay. I like that. I like that image of thinking with your heart. I don't know if I can apply it right away, but I like the idea. Yeah, so one more I had was, I need to protect my own needs. I can't trust my needs to be taken care of by other people. So this is what some people might label as being selfish. I don't want to label it like that, because it's a fear. It's a fear, right? That can result in behavior that only takes care of yourself, right? And so can be labeled as selfish. But we want to see it with compassion, I think. That, again, it might be that you grew up not being protected by other people. So this might make you think like, oh, I have to take care of myself, or maybe just my own little family, because we can't really trust other people to do that. Let me know if they can relate to that one. Let me see here. Okay. So we have now one that I also had a lot, especially when it comes to Israel-Palestine, that I thought in the beginning, I thought, oh, it's so complex. It's also what everybody was saying, is this is very complex. And at some point I realized that's also a label that we put, when actually one party is more powerful than the other party and wants to have that as the story. And that story means, when we say that, when we say the label, it's complex, it means like, I'm not going to touch it, right? It results in, I'm not going to touch it, which means that things are going to stay the same. So, and this is not always, but in this context, when we put the label, it's complex, it's a way of keeping things the same. And of course, the reality is there are complexities to it, right? And I'm pretty sure I don't know all the details. But believing, stopping there and only believing like I don't understand what's happening, is also a way to, will actually result in me feeling small and like I can't do anything. When quite often we do actually know what we believe in, what we actually believe with the limited knowledge that we have. But it can be scary to admit that, especially if it's not what everybody thinks. I can relate to that selfishness. Ah, thank you. Thank you so much for sharing that. Yay. I'm celebrating your honesty. Especially because I introduced the word selfish. Yeah. Can you share more how it shows up for you? Because I know that it's not selfishness, right? It's a fear. So what is the fear? And you can take a moment to think about it. I'll see what's next on the list, what we can do. So yeah, we looked a bit at some thoughts and potential things that can block us, right? So I want to ask you about your needs. Like, where do you feel a passion to contribute? And it doesn't have to be at all with things that I mentioned. It could be on a more ecological topic or something completely different. But I'm curious to hear, where would you like to contribute more than you're currently doing? And if you can, but I'm also happy to guess a bit, and maybe can even guess with each other in the comments, what is your need? What is your need behind that? And when we think about needs, it's about really connecting to our dream. So sometimes when people say, my need for respect is not met, or my need for being heard is not met, it can sound a bit like a complaint. But when we start speaking more in a positive way, meaning saying, I have a need to be heard. I have a need for respect. It's more like this, I have a dream. It's like you're bringing in your vision. It's not a complaint, but it's a vision. So I think it can be very helpful also in terms of energizing ourselves and to have a sense of positivity and power and energy to connect with the need. But maybe to take it step by step, first just let me know what is a theme that touches you, where you would like to contribute more than you're doing right now. Where does the theme of social justice call you? Because there's a reason you joined here today. Coincidence or not. Mm-hmm. giving as much airtime to peace and healthy human doings. What is that? I don't know what that is. As is done to news about what makes us sad. Oh, okay, I see. You want to give more airtime to what is actually happening that is positive, and as is done to news about what makes us sad and lonely. I love that. Yeah, so a change in the media, what the media is focusing on. And what do you think would bring that? What need, what quality would that bring to the world? My nervous system recently collapsed, so as much as I would like to be participating in advocacy and activism, I'm in a sort of forced solitude, which feels very paradoxical. Okay, yeah, you really need rest, I imagine. And what I'm talking about today is I'm glad that you're bringing up the term activism. I purposefully didn't use this so far, not because I don't want to talk about it at all, but because I think, well, this is kind of what I wanted to explore next, so it's amazing that you bring it up. We usually, when I say the word activist, we often have a very narrow, specific image with what that is. I remember I went to a protest with my mom a couple of weeks ago. My mom is 76. We walked around and she said to me, like, these are all very normal people. I was like, what do you mean, mom? And she kept saying it. And at some point, I was like, oh, she means that they're not riots. They're not rioting. They're just walking around peacefully. And I was like, wow, that's so interesting, right? So whenever there is some upheaval in a protest, that's what we're seeing on the news. So that is the association that she had gotten about protest and about activists, right? Whatever that may mean. So... yeah, so I'm saying this also because of what you were sharing about the nervous system collapse, that I think we can contribute in so many ways. And sometimes rest is needed, right? So maybe I'm not even necessary. This is not an advice to you at all. Just an opportunity for me to touch on that topic that, we can, actually I think I wrote a few things down, but we can also boycott a brand, right? Brands that are doing things that are not so nice. and that's something we can do without much extra effort. We don't need to put much extra energy. It's just about, not so much about doing something, but more about not doing something, right? So there's so many things that we can just, even if you just Google, like, what can I do to contribute that is not necessarily taking to the streets? There's a million things. So, yeah. But rest is equally important. So, yeah. Jake is defining power in the way that Gene Sharp did, the ability to act, organize, or create change. Yeah, I always find it difficult when definitions of power don't include the relational aspect of it and the sort of relative aspect of it, as it matters whether I have an ability to act, organize, and create change, but in the definition of power, I think it also needs to be included that how much I have of that is not an absolute thing. It's a relative thing, meaning if somebody else has a lot more of that, that is what power is also about, right? I hope I'm making myself clear, but the dynamic thing is often left out of the definition of power, whereas that is so important. So I always find that a little bit strange. But yeah, let me know what you think about that. Jake is saying, navigating political/personal convos where vague, manipulative rhetoric justifies harm. How can I stay rooted in MVC and call it out without being seen as unempathetic or too intense? I love that. Can you give an example of what would they be saying? Now I kind of lost the bigger thread for a moment. I'm going to scroll up a little bit. All right. We were talking about what is the area where you feel like social justice is needed. And maybe social justice is also already narrowing down the topics you think that can be included. It can be as wide as you want. And secondly, I'm curious about what need would it meet for you if something would change in your area. Very curious. Yes, small action and rest is a beautiful and a very effective change. Yes. Yes. Yeah, and I mentioned the boycotting brands like I'm not really here to necessarily advise on specific ways of doing activism, also because I don't really know which causes you're thinking about. For me, it's more about looking at our thoughts and our feelings that might block us. But I did have a quick thought, just things like if you, for example, have your own business and you think that your niche doesn't really fit with the current biggest social justice themes, the biggest things going on, I think you still can have like things like a way for people to donate to that, even if the theme is not directly linked to your business. If you care about that, and of course it does depend a little bit on what industry you're in, right? So, but you'll know if it fits. But I see people thinking that, yeah, it's not possible. And then when we talk a bit more, they're like, oh yeah, actually I could do something. I'm just scared. And the thing is, if everybody's scared, there is silence, right? And if everybody's like brave, I mean, it's so simple in a way. You can see it right now, right? 2 years ago, when it comes to Israel and Palestine, like everybody was, way more people were silent. Let's put it like that. Way more people were silent. Yeah. And especially when people with privilege get involved, like now with the Greta Thunberg, like when white people get more involved, there's more coverage, it becomes more mainstream. So that's can be very powerful, obviously. So I was very curious about the example of Jake, but I think maybe Jake is still thinking. I understand that maybe you didn't prepare to come and talk about this, but I'm going to round up in about 5 or 10 minutes. If there's someone, so I announce this as also a possibility to connect with me on stage. If there's someone who would like that, there's still a little bit of time for that. If you can let me know in the comments, what is your specific theme or question, we can still do that. And I also understand because this is all new thing. So if it's not for you, then that's also fine, but, let's see. Jake is saying it's complex. Oh yeah, we talked about this. Maybe you didn't join yet then, but I that's amazing that you bring that up. Yeah, so it's complex can be a deeply, trivially true, but used to stall moral clarity. Power often hides behind complexity when action is urgent. Oh, you did hear me say that. Okay. And that's an example of that. Yeah, I see that. So you're asking, how can you stay rooted in MVC and call it out without being seen as unempathetic or too intense? I think one thing is that sometimes this idea that I would almost say, and maybe this is not exactly how you phrased it, but I often see people thinking, I have to stay rooted in MVC, and it becomes almost a block to call something out. And so I would say sometimes we might just want to call something out in whatever way we can, imperfectly, and then rather later have a more full-on dialogue where we can clean something up if needed, rather than trying to be perfect with the four steps or saying a need. When we notice something that we think needs calling out or calling in or whatever you want to call it, we're usually triggered. We're usually scared, or it's an intense topic. To request of ourselves that we do that with the four steps in perfect MVC can be a lot. So let me know if you resonate with that, Jake. So that's one thing. It can be a lot to actually even ask to stay rooted in MVC. So staying rooted in MVC, yes, you can actually stay rooted in MVC without having to do all the four steps. So what could be done is that you just state that you're triggered. And that is still MVC, right? I'm not necessarily judging people, but I am also speaking up in some sort of way. Or even just saying, I don't like this, right? So that something is at least said. And you're saying, you want to call it out without being seen as unempathetic or too intense. I think that's, again, maybe I would need a bit more context to really understand the theme and the type of people you're interacting with and your relationship as well. So if you have any info on that would be helpful. A friend said global warming doesn't matter. I felt alarmed and tense because I value truth and collective responsibility. When I explored it, he reframed it with caveats, but criticized my intensity instead. I want to name harm and stay connected. Yeah. Okay. So the criticizing someone's tone, it's like what we call tone policing, right? Criticizing the intensity when we don't know what to do with the message is a way of defending ourselves. And so if your goal is then to try and be less intense, that's not really what it's about, is it? It's just about them being fearful, them wanting to stay in their safe bubble where they have certain beliefs that keep them feeling safe, right? So the fear can be so huge that anything has to be done to get that out. Like, I don't like this message. It's too intense, right? And it might not even matter, even if you were able to say it with the four steps. So, depending on how much energy, and there is real choice here, right? Like, who do you want to surround yourself with, and who do you want to put energy into? Like, personally, I have very little energy left for people who are so far from me on the political spectrum. Because there's people that are maybe meeting me halfway, where I could with half the time have way more success, let's say, in connection or in planting a seed with them, for example. So that's almost like a strategic thing, because at some point we get burned out. Let's try to connect on stage. Okay, we don't have a lot of time, but let's see. I'm gonna invite. So I hope this works. This is the first time I'm gonna do that. So you would need to click the link. Let's see if that happens. And then I think let me know what happens when you click that. Does it work, Jake? What do you call that? The tension. What's happening with Jake? Where is Jake? Is he alive? Is he going to be on stage? I'm going to give it a minute, and if not, then we'll do it next time. Let me just start answering Jake's question, and then let's see if he appears on stage. Yeah, so I think the last thing I said was like making a choice in who you do NVC with, because I mean, if you have energy to do NVC with every single person you meet, by all means, go for it. I'm not that person. Yeah, I think that's the first step to really make a choice, and to, instead of telling ourselves we have to connect with everybody. Did I see some? Oh, no, there's someone else. Wait, what's happening? I see Karina. Oh, Jake. Yeah, I see Jake. Okay.
Hello. Hi, am I coming in loud and clear for you?
That works.
I'm testing my audio. Are you hearing me?
Jake, can you hear me?
I do hear you. Do you hear me?
Oh, that's my music. Wait, give me a second.
I'm looking, Jake, at my level. It looks like, okay, I hear you hearing me.
Yeah, I hear you now. Okay, awesome.
Hello. Oh, I'm so happy to connect. You've been such an influence for me over the years, and I'm so grateful for your contribution to the mission of nonviolent communication. So first, thank you.
Well, oh, thank you so much. Wow. Can we see, are you willing to shift on your camera?
Let me tidy up my background a little bit while we're chatting, and then I'll be happy to.
I understand. You didn't expect this. Okay, so what I'm hearing is this. I don't know if you heard this last thing that I said about making a choice with who we want to put energy into. I'm curious how that lands for you.
So deeply. This has been so impactful for me over this last month and just over a month. This started with my brother making, when I recognized this pattern that's going on here, I recognized it because the people closest in my life are implementing it, as well as what I'm seeing, the same patterns in the political sphere. And I see, what I saw was my brother came into a conversation. He made a deepity claim, which was that it sounded profound on its surface. He said, power is inherently evil. That was his claim. Sounds profound. It's really, wow. But when I was breaking down all the definitions of it, and really thinking critically about it, I'm studying Gene Sharp's work. I'm working on how to apply power in the political realm and how to use it to enact action for justice and human dignity. And I'm not seeing my work as inherently evil. And the conversation spiraled. It was heartbreaking to me. And I've, you know, my brother and I, we have a more than 30-year relationship with each other. And he's been my meaning-making partner. I could ask difficult questions, and I could trust that he would be there to go through that with me and derive a truth. Like, that was our standard. That was our ruler. And instead, I'm just hearing these shifting definitions that are trivially true. When they are true, it doesn't matter so much. Like harmful harm is harmful. You know, harmful power is harmful.
So let me stop you for a second, Jay. I'm curious about what is your need when it comes to your brother. Are you willing to go to that, to sort of go from the story to your body?
Yeah, it was so intense for me. I was feeling such an intensity in my body through that conversation. And I could feel this misalignment with the type of conversation that I was hoping to have with my brother compared to what we were having. And throughout the conversation, I'm attempting to use nonviolent communication. I'm saying, PJ.
Yeah, I'm going to stop you again, Jay. I really want to slow down, because what's happening now is you're telling me the story, and that will just keep you in the spiraling in your head.
Beautiful.
So I want to take a moment to really to let you feel how does your body feel right now?
A little bit worked up going back into it. And not only was it happening last month, but it happened last night as well with a different friend, two different friends. And I'm seeing this everywhere.
You're going again in your head.
I really want to
slow down and let you connect with your body.
Yep. All right. Connect with my body. I feel an intensity in my chest. My heart is pounding heavier than it was. I'm pacing around my apartment. I feel a forwardness in my temples, and I feel a great intensity and a passion around this because I care so deeply about truth and justice and human rights. And when I see what I'm recognizing as a particular rhetorical pattern, it threatens that for me. And when I try to enact and make requests that we dialogue differently, I'm being told that I'm too intense and I'm being too controlling and demanding in the conversation. And that's so overwhelming for me. And I don't know how to do it. And I see it tearing my relationships apart around me. And going back to what you said about what types of relationships you're willing to have with people, this has been so hard for me because my brother's been my meaning-making partner. And I'm needing to redefine that relationship. I'm needing to redefine the foundation of what that relationship is and re-raise the pillars that are supporting that relationship. And I'm having trouble even picturing that because it was such a crucial thing for me. I'm having trouble redefining what that relationship with my brother.
Jake, I want to slow you down again a little bit.
Thanks.
Because what I'm hearing is, I wonder if we go even, I don't know if it's lower or deeper, but if we go to the inner child in you, that had your brother, who I hear is incredibly important to you, long relationship, right? And there was this maybe admiration for him or trust in him, and that gets a bit broken right now.
Yes.
And I wonder if for your inner child, like, forget about all the stories, forget about all the stories, but for your inner child, I wonder if it's just super, super scary.
Oh, it is. He's been such a, you know, we could work through this difficult world together. And the world from my childhood was a religious authoritarian upbringing surrounded by conspiratorial thinking. I know what this type of rhetoric looks like, and I've seen how it can be used to manipulate situations and exert power over people. And now I'm seeing my brother enact the same tools and applying them toward me. And I'm scared. And I don't know how to redefine that relationship in ways where I can feel safe again. And so I'll leave it there.
Yeah. Yeah, there is an urgency maybe where it's like, hey, something's happening that we actually underwent together. I thought you were my ally.
Yeah.
I thought we were in the same spot, but now the ally turns into my enemy. And here I am alone, both losing a friend and having a new threat. Is it kind of like that?
Exactly. Yeah, it's like he's smart enough to come down this path with me. And it feels like I'm further along, and it feels like he's I'm offering an olive branch. Come with me. Come with me. And he's wanting to stay where he is. And it's so confusing for me. How come he wants to wallow in what I see as a type of filth of rhetoric, and which I think he would agree with even if he looked at it hard enough? He's the type of guy that would, but he's not willing to right now, it seems to me.
Yeah, and I guess the mind really wants to understand it. If only I can understand it, then I can maybe change it, then I can maybe fix him, then I can maybe control him in a way, right? Bringing back to sanity or to understanding. Hey!
Hello!
Nice to meet you. That's
you
lovely
well.
To have a face. I don't know if you heard the last thing I was saying. Like, sometimes I find when I really keep on analyzing someone and trying to understand them, it's because I really want to change their behavior, and it can be a way of hoping to control them.
Well,
which
I'd like to say my intention, if I may, that the hope to control them is because from my perspective, I've seen this as a critical pillar of what represents our relationship. And so it is out of a need to protect the integrity of what this relationship is and represents. Yes, it is a type of like, I want you to come with me. Please come with me. Please join me here. I don't know how to have philosophical conversations with you anymore. I want to talk about this stuff with you, but I can't. My heart races. It's not good for my health. I cannot be in these conversations with you if they're being conducted like this. I'm making a request for you to do this. And if you're not going to do that, I'm not going to control you or shame you into doing it, but I need to leave and redefine how I interact with this. And I don't want to, because I like what we had, and I have to mourn the death of the relationship that I had into something new, and it's hard.
Yeah, I imagine there's one part of you that maybe still hopes it can somehow work out, and one part of you that is already sort of grieving, or already, so you're kind of like in this in-between state.
Yeah, it could be better if they only chose differently. And so I want to exert my power to attempt to influence and to request that they do things differently. And I still want to honor them and the fire that they have, that they bring. But I think that they're not even living up to their own standards and values. And I want to help them realize that.
Yeah. So I was listening to you now, imagining I was your brother. And my reaction was like,
oh yeah,
I'm exaggerating, right? But I'm just...
No, his eyes are bigger.
So what's happening for me as your brother when I hear that is like, I have a need for... Are you open to hear that?
Yes, I'm open to working through this. I only care about truth and knowing.
And I want to say that we're probably not going to work through this entirely. We're just going to see how far we can get with the energy that I still have. But so I have a need for... I think it's this, like, relaxation. Like I feel pressure and kind of like this.
As my brother, you do?
Yeah, as your brother, yeah. Like I long for equality. Like it seems like you think you know what I need. And even if that's true, I'm not going to listen to it, because I'm my own person. And I need your support. And I'm going to step in back into Marianne right now, and because I want to add that when he says, I need your support, that's an abstract need, right? So it doesn't mean you have to agree with him. Yeah. But I'm curious how that lands in you.
I hear that. And I'm going to tell you how I see things. It's a It's not a clear observation, but it's my assessment of it. When he says that he needs support, I see that given the structure that he has set up with this claim, that power is inherently evil, any means, by the definition that that I applied with Gene Sharp, any means that I use myself to exert anything would be a means of power, of my using my voice as a power. And so I do want to support him. However, every time that I try, that I tried in that conversation, it was being received as evil, that I am doing evil unto him. I am exerting my power to project evil unto him. And so how am I supposed to support him when it seems like the options that he's giving me is to comply with his claim and nod my head, or if I challenge it in any way, I'm now exerting my power for evil.
Yeah. And what you want is just to connect with him?
Yeah, I want to talk about deep stuff with him. And like, I want to get to the rigor that I thought that we had in talking about truth claims. And he's making a claim here. He values truth very much as well, as I thought, as much as me. I see it as a holy thing. It's my standard. It's my ruler. Everything, it lines up to it.
What is talking about the specific theme? What is there? Does it meet more needs than just connection? Is it also depth or?
Yeah, I like to be able to talk with him about what I'm doing. So I'm studying this, and I formed an organization that supports political organizations, nonprofits in the world that we live in today. And I'm utilizing studies of power in order to influence political change as I best know how. And I'm hearing that that's inherently evil.
Yeah. So it's a huge judgment about your life's work, basically. Is that how I...
Yeah, based on some definition. And then I'm trying to stick on a definition. What are we talking about here? And it's just so slippery. It's
frustrating. Yeah. So you had him as a sort of sparring partner who seemed to believe in this very same, or had this same passion about truth, but that is gone.
Yeah. I don't know how I can trust him anymore to have these types of conversations. And now, I mean, it's great. My circle has been evolving. I'm having a higher echelon of conversations with philosophers and people who are in the fight of epistemology and what truth means. And I'm having a higher rigor of conversation with an echelon of people that are doing the work. And I want to invite him along to that. We got here together, man. Keep on coming. But I don't want to leave him behind, but I don't know how else to proceed. I don't know how to keep a relationship with him when I can't trust him anymore in this foundational element I need to rebuild, if there's going to be anything.
It's hard for you to imagine any sort of relationship without that need for alignment around truth and that exploration.
Yeah, it was such a foundational support pillar that when that one collapsed, it put so much weight on the other pillars that it just crushed the whole structure of our relationship. And I know that there are other things, like we have shared experiences growing up. We came from a strange household and but now we're relating to it so differently. I don't know how to have those conversations. It's because I was having every conversation. It was all supported by our desire to get to truth together and to make meaning out of it together. And now that that's been jackhammered, I'm left with those other, I mean, they've all collapsed under the weight, and I don't know what else there is. it's a rubbled mess for me.
Yeah. Yeah, it sounds to me like there's these different stages of grief, and that you're in the one where you just want to say no to this experience. Like there's a big like, no, don't do this, no. And maybe that's like, I imagine if I could look into your body, that's like the one word that summarizes it all. Like, no. Does that resonate?
Yeah. Yeah. And at the same time, the most painful thing is that the things that he's accusing me of doing, like controlling the conversation and domineering, every time, like I'm doing my very best to apply all the tools that I know to engage in empathy. And I'm being told that I don't care. I'm being told that I'm domineering and controlling. And it's like, dude, look in the mirror, man. I'm just trying to hold the mirror up. I want you to see that, like, you're exerting a type of power here with your words as well. And you're only telling me what I'm doing. And it's hard when I want you to see yourself a little bit too. And I matched his body language for a moment. He was getting real intense, you know, and he's getting real. And I mirrored him, you know, I get on his level just for a moment. And I'm like, I don't want to have these type. How are we supposed to have conversations then? And I'm like, well, not like this. And he couldn't take it. He could not stand the direct mirror seeing precisely a mirror of the exact body language that he was performing upon himself. And this was hard. It's traumatic for me. Like he lives out in Virginia, and he was visiting me in Missouri. And after that moment, he slams down his coffee cup. We're at a coffee house, and he walks out the door and he drives to Virginia. He didn't say another word. He couldn't handle the body language, and he literally drove 1600 miles without saying a word to me. And then we didn't talk for a month. Oh.
And what about sadness?
It's overwhelming. And it's overwhelming that what I'm seeing in the political ecosystem, I'm seeing this exact same things being applied in my family setting and with my friends too. And it's all around me. It's just this sickness in how we talk to each other.
I want to stop you for a second again, Jake, because you're in your head. Where is the sadness?
Where is it? I'd like to answer that. How can I answer that for you? Where is it? Physically in my body?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm not sure I've ever identified it like that, so I'd love to work through it with you. I feel an intense feeling here. And here, and it's forward, the bridge of my nose, droopiness, my chest is exploding, my gut is sinking, my shoulders are, I feel just warped and weak, and like, My muscles are tired, a lot of tiredness with it too.
Yeah, it sounds like more like it's frustration and fighting and the tiredness as a result, maybe.
Yeah, it's my entire upbringing, now my brother, and also what I've chosen in the political arena that I'm stepping into. It's every day I'm surrounded by this.
Yeah.
And I want to be able to talk with people about what they care about and their values and who they are. And I'm struggling to do that. I can't get to the level that I want to. I think that like for example, in the political realm, a lot of the times the people, they're speaking to values that we could actually probably agree on. But instead we're talking at a level that just won't get us there, and we can do better. And if we do better, we can write better policy that better supports people. I want that process to be supported. And I see as well how that's related to even family dynamics and friendship dynamics, because it's everywhere.
Yeah.
We need to talk better. We need to disagree with each other better. And I'm struggling so much about what I can do in a situation where I encounter a claim like this that's so unsettling to me that I see the harm of it. And I have a list actually sitting here that I made of all these other political
Jake, I'm going to interrupt you.
Ways that I see this, yep.
And this is just because we're quite over time in general right now. So I mourn a bit that I didn't invite you or anyone like earlier. So what I want to do is I just want to ask those who are listening to share what way they were touched by Jake's sharing, what way maybe you could relate. We don't have many people, but it would be amazing if one or two people could just share something about that. And I just want to thank you a lot, Jake, for opening up. I'm very aware we didn't really round this up at all. Just want to acknowledge that. But I'm very grateful that you were willing to share here. And
yeah, thank you. Just to really be seen for my experience is so meaningful for me. It's because I'm seeing some of these. It's harder to find the types of relationships, people that care about these things to the level that I do. And then so I'm very grateful for your meeting there.
Yay. Thank you so much, Jake.
Thank you. It's been a real privilege and an honor to speak with you. Hope it's not the last time.
All the best to you.
You as well. Thank you.
Right. So everybody, thank you so much for joining me. And I'd love to see you again. I'd love to do this again. Have an amazing day, everybody. If there's still people on Instagram as well, thank you so much for joining, and see you again soon.